The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, we'll talk about the struggle at the moment with COVID in just a couple of minutes. But first, I want to mention some good news. The EMA, the European Medicines Authority, received the application for conditional marketing authorization for the next vaccine after Pfizer and Moderna, the AstraZeneca vaccine. And they expect an opinion on marketing organization to be issued by the EMA as early as the 29th of January, because they'll have a meeting of all their experts and they will discuss it, and then it's expected that if that goes well, that the European Commission will then issue the permission for everything to go, if you like, into the marketplace. Now, they say that the time frame for evaluation is short. It's only possible because the EMA has already reviewed some data on the vaccine during what they call a rolling review. During this phase, the EMA assessed data from laboratory studies, which is called non-clinical data, data on the vaccine's quality, you know, on the ingredients and the way it's manufactured, and some evidence on safety and efficacy from a pooled analysis of interim clinical data from four ongoing clinical trials in the United Kingdom, in Brazil, and in South Africa. And they'll pool all that information and more into making their decision. And then hopefully we'll have AstraZeneca shortly available to us in Ireland thereafter. And the bonus for AstraZeneca over the other two is that quite simply, it can be stored in the fridge. Just like the ordinary flu vaccine in a pharmacy, in a GP surgery, it can be stored there, and that should make its application and distribution much more straightforward. Now, officials are warning that up to 2,500 virus patients could potentially need a hospital bed within the next 2 weeks. 400 may require intensive care. Now, speaking at a virtual event last night, Executive Director of the WHO Health Emergencies Programme, Dr. Mike Ryan, as you know, he's an Irishman from Mayo, he said the surge in cases here is not due to a new variant.
There are no other options but to do what you've done before. I see in my own country, in Ireland, which has suffered a massive increase in cases over the last number of weeks, had done extremely well in two surges of disease, had brought the disease under control, and has suffered one of the most acute increases in disease incidence of any country in the world over the last number of months, and not due to the variant, let me add, but mainly due to increased social mixing and reduction in physical distancing. The government and the authorities there have taken, and the community have taken, immediate action over the last 2 weeks, and already we're starting, the disease numbers starting to drop, the positivity rates starting to drop, and we are seeing the National Virus Reference Laboratory there doing superb surveillance for the new variant strains, which they are tracking. Right now, there is no evidence that variants are driving any element of severity. There is some evidence that variants may be increasing or adding to transmission, and in some sense giving some extra transmissibility to the virus. I was talking to my colleague Tony Houlihan, the Chief Medical Officer in Ireland, earlier, and we were almost saying that this was like adding a substitution in the second half of a football game. It doesn't change the rules of the game. It doesn't change what you do, but it gives the virus some new energy, some new impetus. It adds to the challenge you face because the opposition is bringing on some new players to the field. It doesn't change the rules of the game, though. It doesn't change what we need to do to win. It just changes the strength of the opponent.
Now, during the NPHET press briefing yesterday, the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Holland, said that the public socialised in December at pre-pandemic levels.
If you look at the move from level 5 to level 3 at the beginning of December, you'll see that there was a very steep rise in that purple graph there, a very steep rise, back to levels of that form of activity that were essentially summer levels of activity. And then it continued that rise up to a level just in advance of the Christmas period that was effectively pre-pandemic. So it was pre-pandemic levels of socialisation.
So attempts to blame the new variant are misplaced. It was basically our socialisation which caused this third surge. And we're not getting any credit around the world. Bloomberg said, and I'm borrowing from the Irish Times now, a piece I saw online last night, Ireland's COVID-19 outbreak is now the worst in the world, according to Bloomberg. The government relaxed restrictions last month, a tactic that may have contributed to one of the world's highest contagion rates. In Belgium, the broadcaster RTBF said Ireland had become the country in the world where the pandemic is spreading fastest. It must be said the Irish situation is in fact much more serious. If in the United Kingdom infections have increased by 50% in 1 week, in Ireland they have quadrupled. In Germany, NTV reported the Irish lockdown miracle was an illusion. Europe looked fascinated at the supposed miracle of the Republic. The Irish strategy seemed to be working, but the disillusionment came on St. Patrick's Day. The Dutch point out that even though we're close to Britain, Ireland's surge, they say, is due to socialising and eased restrictions rather than the new strain. The coronavirus is once again on the rise in Ireland, and it's not because of the new, quote, British mutation, but because of a slightly too cosy Christmas. Irish people often visited each other. That's according to Metro. And it goes on in Italy as well. In Japan, they report the highly contagious mutation that's prevalent in the UK spreading to Ireland. But it says, Channel News Asia, Irish COVID-19 surge driven by socialising, not the new variant. So it's fairly widespread, the criticism of Ireland and the way that we handled when others were closing down, we decided to open up. Professor of Health Systems at the Nursing and Human Sciences Department in DCU, Anthony Staines, is on the line. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
Now, we're in a bit of a quagmire here when it comes to treating COVID-19, because the demand for hospital beds is rapidly increasing. Some underlying notions that the lockdown has slowed things a bit. But when you've got thousands infected every day and they in turn are infecting thousands, it's going to take a while to flatten this curve.
It's going to take quite a while. And this is largely self-inflicted. We have failed throughout this to grapple with what's actually going on, which is a highly infectious disease spreading around our community. We haven't done the very basic things, restricting travel into the country, quarantining at airports, substantial restrictions on movement within the country as required, effective case finding, effective isolation of cases, isolation of contacts. Many people who are waiting for tests still lose money if they are not able to go out to work. And that's just wrong. That's just unfair. We've failed to bring in a reasonable public health response to this. And we're now paying the price for that. And that's very unfortunate for all of us.
Now, we did prepare for a massive surge at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, with the City West facility being prepared and the leasing of the services of the private hospitals, even though they were never called upon. Are we better prepared now?
I think we are in terms of the scale of what's available. The private hospitals can be brought on stream very quickly if that's required. We don't have the staff to run a hospital, an extra hospital. So the British have their Nightingale hospitals and they have the same problem. They've built these facilities with beds and ventilators and they have no staff. And that's a complete waste of everybody's time. So we are in the same situation. We have the number of ventilators we have. My colleagues are performing to a remarkable level. The survival rate for Irish patients admitted to intensive care is one of the best in the world. And that reflects the quality of my clinical colleagues. But the lack of preparation for a whole system response to all of this is scary. None of this is necessary. And what we're asking for the government to do is to make this the last lockdown. If we make the right choices now, we can bring this to an end, bringing the number of cases down to extremely low levels.
What are the right choices, though? I mean, we have now closed the schools until the end of January. There's a hope that those who desperately need hands-on schooling will get it, the small number of children who will suffer terribly with the lack of schooling. But we'll park that one for the moment. The school's opening at the end of January. Will that be okay, do you think? Or do we just have to keep waiting until the R number goes right down, until the daily caseload goes right down, before we say, yes, we can reopen?
At the moment, the R number is about 2.5, which means that every case is generating about 2.5 more cases. It is going down, or as far as we can tell. There have been some problems with the data, which also reflects decades of underinvestment in ICT. But it almost certainly is going down, which is great. It's fantastic. But until it goes below 1, we're not out of the woods yet. And it has to go right down. The message from what happened in November is that we cannot reopen with 200 cases a day. We've seen where that brings us. So we need to bring this right down. And we need a government policy that is frank with us, honest with us, that says the end game for all of this is vaccination, which will, all going well, bring us back to normal in time for next Christmas. But it won't.
What do you think it is, though, about the policymakers, that they couldn't see what they were doing, giving people a break, as they put it? You know, allowing, you know, if you have a bit of a lockdown throughout November, we'll be able to open up and everyone can have a Christmas. Even as Europe, you know, we were looking at Germany locking down, abandoning Christmas markets, which is a huge part of their Christmas every year. We saw the Thanksgiving experience in Canada, the post-Thanksgiving situation in the United States. And we thought somehow we're different.
I think it's fair to say that Ireland has dealt with this about as badly as most other European countries, or maybe not as badly as some. But most European countries have made a real mess of this because they don't take infectious disease seriously. They think of infectious disease as a problem that belongs in sunny places where there are mosquitoes, and that they're irrelevant to wealthy modern societies. And as COVID has clearly shown, that's not true. So we were out of the habit of taking infections seriously. We were out of the habit of taking public health seriously. If we'd done that, we would have been able to control this much faster, much more effectively. We would still have had a difficult time March, April of last year. We were caught in the hop.
No, but I know a doctor who just came back from North America and is now going to be working here. And the observation that she made was that even as she was going on duty in the middle of the night in Canada, she'd see a few people, everyone wearing a mask. What struck her most coming back here is how few masks were being worn. She said it was quite striking.
We've had very mixed messaging about masks for a long time. So at the beginning of this, the NPHET were very against wearing masks and felt that masks were a mistake. And it took them a long time to accept that the evidence had changed. A lot more evidence was put together over the first month or two of the pandemic. And we still very seldom see politicians, public figures, speaking wearing masks. In other countries, that's much commoner. In other countries, the equivalent of NPHET do wear masks on their television briefings. And it is... The risk of transmission in a large TV or radio studio is very low, but you're using that image to send a message to your population that this is what needs to be done.
Now, one of the things that keeps being repeated, and there is that case, and you know, you can see it all the time, that people who are likely, you know, to be huffing and puffing. I watch the joggers and the cyclists, and they don't wear masks, and I'm just thinking to myself, even for their own safety, I mean, if you're huffing and puffing, you're drawing in a lot of air. So if you do happen to pass a group of people, of young people, for example, who are asymptomatic and are breathing out this stuff, and you're sucking in vast quantities of air as a jogger, you're likely to be more likely to be infected than otherwise. So for your own protection alone, you might do yourself a favour as well as doing the rest of us a favour. But Anthony, here's the thing I keep hearing from the HSE and all the spokespeople. They say the number of people in the health service who are now out of commission because either they have COVID or they're a close contact of someone with COVID is a reflection of what's going on in society at large. And when society at large, when the numbers go down, then the numbers of people in the health service with COVID, that their numbers will go down too and people will get back to work. Do you think that's good enough? Because there's another way of doing this with lateral testing every day to make sure, because the thing about it, I keep stressing it again, the lateral test is good for showing at what when people are actually infectious. And in Britain, they were talking about have a lateral test, go, and if you're clear, you have a pass for a day. You can go about your business for a day, but you need another one tomorrow to go about your business tomorrow. Now, I would think that given the deficit we have in staffing of the health service, that everything possible should be done to test as many people in this way as possible to keep them at work when they're safe to be at work.
I think it needs testing. There was quite a strong
argument. We've been talking about this for about 5 months, talking about doing a test on the antigen tests.
Oh, we should just do it. I don't dispute that for a millisecond. We should just test it and see. But I'm conscious of the risks of any spread of infection. I work at Michael's House, and like many other intellectual disability services, we have a significant problem with staff absence, and we are moving heaven and earth to keep all our service users safe. But it's very difficult.
Yeah, and indeed, you may have heard yesterday on the programme, it was confirmed for us that you cannot oblige someone working in a nursing home or a facility to be tested, never mind vaccinated. You can't oblige them to be tested, which is absolutely mind-boggling.
Our staff have been exceptionally cooperative and have bent over backwards to do everything they can to keep things running.
But the point is, you can't force them to do a test if they say no. And that is unconscionable.
Yeah, that hadn't occurred to me, but that may well be true. But we need to know does testing benefit? We could find that out fairly quickly. But I do think we need to test it. We need to test testing rather than just bring it in, because it might be very useful. It might give false reassurance. We just don't know yet, and that's what we would have to check.
What is worrying about all of this, when you undermine confidence in government decisions, then you undermine confidence in pretty much every initiative they take on this pandemic front. You know, when they make promises about vaccine delivery and so on, you know, people are saying, well, can we trust them to do it? You know, why is Denmark 10 times better than us at getting the vaccine? They're in the EU too. They're in the same program we're in. Why are they quicker than us?
We're about halfway up the EU league table, which is more or less where I thought we would be. We are limited by our supply. We are limited by the sheer difficulty of handling this vaccine. And you mentioned the AstraZeneca vaccine might be approved later this month. And if it is, and if it proves effective, that will make life easier for everybody. But I'm pretty confident that HSE will roll out vaccination to practically everyone by the autumn, which is pretty much what every other European country is going to do, because the supply isn't there to do anything else. Unfortunately, our next-door neighbours are taking an incredible risk with giving a single dose of vaccine and then seeing what happens.
Yeah.
And we don't know what will happen. We're going to find out.
Well, the AstraZeneca, I believe, has been manufactured in huge quantities already. So hopefully that particular issue won't arise with that particular third vaccine when it becomes available. I'd read you some of the texts coming in from our News Talk listeners. Lads, I know a girl whose husband got a positive test result after Christmas and still went to a neighbour's party on New Year's Eve because she said she felt fine. That's what you're dealing with, people who feel fine and therefore... Sure, what's the harm? Why is none of this being attributed to seasonality? When temperatures drop, the survival time of the virus increases, and this can have a dramatic effect on infection levels. Look across Europe. Everyone is being hammered, including countries that do not socialise, as we did in the run-up to Christmas. Blaming people for everything is the Neffet default position. Well, actually, seasonality has been brought up several times, and it's not that the virus does anything different. As you say, in the air quality, it might linger a bit longer, but it doesn't become more fighting fit in that sense. What we are is worse than Trump's America. When will the cabinet apologise for ignoring NPHET and healthcare workers and allowing a free-for-all style December? This is an angry GP with no information yet on when GPs can register for a vaccine in the Midwest. Very simple, our government decided to listen to special interest groups over science. The opinions of publicans shouldn't matter during a pandemic, says Sid. A bus driver called Paul just drove through Phibsborough. It's like a normal day. Lockdown me eye. The gentleman says the government to make this the last lockdown, but how do you ask a government which is in denial? This one says, I want to remain anonymous. I work in a place where one of my colleague's son has tested positive for COVID. He continues to come to work. As he said, his son is in a different room to the rest of the family. I've been keeping well away from her and refuse to work with her. It's people's reckless behaviour that spreads this. Building sites are still open and working in Wexford, so enforcement is zero in this country at every level. By the way, the list of exemptions is as long as your arm. If you're in a project and you claim it's going to be finished within the month, you can keep it open. highest increase rates, lowest vaccine rates. It's quite clear the government has failed the people again. And so it goes. So many people unhappy with the way I put it the other day, a lack of sure-footedness by the government in coping with this.
I think we've had that from the beginning. And our government has, like many others across Europe, has sought some kind of magic solution to this. There isn't a magic, painless solution to this. There isn't a solution that allows us to go off on our foreign holidays in the summer. That's almost certainly not going to happen. There isn't a solution that allows large numbers of foreign visitors to come into the country over the summer for the same reasons. A significant part of why we have such a high outbreak rate is socialization. But another significant part is people coming from the UK with the existing strains, because the older UK strains are dominant in the north of England. A lot of people from the north of England of Irish ancestry came to Ireland for Christmas, and they carried, some of them carried the virus with them, and it was spread all around the country. So the government was advised repeatedly to bring in quarantine at the airports.
But of course they refused, because it was just too much trouble.
No inclination to do that.
No, too much trouble. Too much trouble. That's it. Professor of Health Systems at the Nursing and Human Sciences Department at DCU, Anthony Staines, thank you very much for joining us. Now,